comment than a question. If you're thinking about a special person to give a gift to, Christmas, Hanukkah, whatever, the best thing in the world is a MasterCard gift card. You can't get them in the bank, but I got mine for Patty in Rite Aid. Whatever amount you want to get her a gift card. And it's the best thing because she could buy whatever she wants. Last year I gave her a sweater. It didn't fit. Fortunately, we had the receipt. So she brought it back and got a shawl. But that's my comment. And Dick, she wants to get me an ad to the file. Let me reach that. If she wants to get an anti-air fryer, we both smoke, we both started as kids, it's hard to quit. She said when she comes in here, I can say it makes her cough, and she's also a heavy smoker, so I'm really giving it to her. What do you think is the best anti-air fryer on the market? Like 35 years ago, I had a Heathkit because everything was Heathkit in my house. It's a lot of business, so if you have a comment on that, and maybe there's another thing. Who is it there? We'll take it, but I'm worried about, I've heard about ionization. Is it safe to breathe that?
Yeah, I think you're asking about air purifiers, is what I think you're saying. And if you had a warm air furnace, a furnace that pumps air through ducts, there's various kinds of ionic air particle collectors. So who makes the best one? I don't know. Let's see if anyone on frequency has a suggestion who makes a good air purifier. And I'm not quite sure whether you want it to be a separate unit or if it's installed into your warm air furnace. K2LI should be listening with anybody's got a comment.
Dick, we don't have warm air. We have baseboard heating. So in the old house, you would go through the ducts. You don't see the end, there were no ducts.
So you're looking for a standalone device. I'm wondering why the audio out of this computer has dropped to such a low level. We'll eventually find out why. Is it my? No, it's not my system. Something about the repeater, the audio dropped to a much lower level. So, anybody have a recommendation for a standalone air purifier? Brand name and dollars and effectiveness? Give me your call letters. K2IW in a sec, then. That doesn't seem to be a subject that the people on frequency know much about at this time, Rich. But we can ask that question again at a later time. And 2EO for any final, K2IW.
Okay, our doctor on frequency. I would like to know what's wrong. I've been told it's wrong. Breathing ionized air, which is what I believe it puts out.
Will you be TJ on some comment? Go right ahead, Rich.
Dick. Rich, ionized air, for one, is a little bit rough on the lungs. It smells good, it feels good, but I don't think you want to be breathing ionized air for a long time. Number two, ionized air tends to dissolve the foam in your furniture. Foam in sofas, the foam in certain mattresses, etc. Foam does not like ionized, does not like ozone. So this is what I've heard, and this is what I'm relaying to you, Rich. WB to Jackson. Yeah.
Go right ahead, Roy.
Yeah, basically ionized air is, sense purposes, ozone. It's the smell that you smell outside after a nice lightning bolt. It smells nice, but unfortunately it can be rather destructive. As Rich mentioned, it's an oxidizing agent, so it disrupts things, and it can also disrupt the inside lining of your lungs. So ionized air is not generally a good thing. I would suggest for Rich that he focus more on something like a good HEPA filter. It's a hospital standard grade filtration system of different filters and maybe some activated and other such things to trap a lot of the particulates. They still do sell the ionizers somewhere. They sold a lot less when they found that a lot of the ionizers do produce too much ozone for the environment that people live in, but they're still around in different makes and models. But HEPA filter is probably the best way to go.
Can't understand because of repeated drop down. Did you say HEPA like what you say in the Bible that a HEPA will appear? Is that the way you say it?
It's HEPA. It's called a HEPA filter. All the filters in your hospital basically have a HEPA filter built into them, and then they have extra filtration on top of that if they're so inclined.
Okay, boy. Is that standalone like a, what do you call it, like a, what we just discussed? What does it look like? Where do I buy one, and how much?
It's not a brand name. It's not a device. It's a mode. It's the way that we were talking about an oil burner versus a gas burner. A HEPA filter is a standard, if you will. A lot of different companies make HEPA filters. There's Rabbit. There's a whole bunch of different companies. What you might want to do is open up your computer and in Amazon and type in HEPA filter, and they'll give you a laundry list of different home filters, and you can read the reviews and get a sense of what's a good thing and what's a bad thing.
Good boy. I take it as a fan to draw in the tobacco, I would assume, and I'm going to look online. Yes.
It has basically a fan to push the air through the filtration systems, and the filtration systems usually are replaceable and they expire after a given amount of time, although you really should run a vacuum cleaner through it to clean it up before the next time that you're going to swap the filters for a new filtration packet.
Okay, boy, I'm going to do that. Patty wants to give me one for Christmas. Smoke, she said in here, is so bad. Even though she is a heavy smoker, she coughs. A woman was in here from her grandson's school. Nietzsche had to talk to her and her son, which is his father. As soon as she came in the house, she had an asthma attack. So we want to keep it down.
Certainly a good idea, and unfortunately everyone probably by now knows my opinion of smoking in general, but contact secondhand smoking is also a problem for people, and so, yeah, be respectful of people as well, and try and vent a lot of that nasty stuff out of your house.
Yes. And what did you say? How do you spell the filter's name? I'm going to look it right up.
Hotel Echo Papa Alpha.
Got it. Anyway, I'm done. Dick, no, you remind me you said tech that so long. Also now, Roy is giving his well-needed help. I commend you guys. Back to you, Dick.
Second, WB2 Jackson. Go ahead, Rich.
Me too, seconding that. You guys rock. WB2 Jackson.
Yeah, not everybody agrees with everything that we do, but we think we're doing more good than bad. KE2EJ, Eric, are you available on frequency? KE2EJ, K2RIW? I'm assuming Eric may be able to hear me, and maybe he can't get back to the microphone in time. Approximately 5 minutes ago, the audio coming through the 85 repeater dropped down by 6 or 10 dB. Listen to somebody on the input. Their volume is normal. What's coming through the machine is quite a bit weaker. The beeps are coming through full volume, but the audio dropped down 6 or 10 dB, which comes through 85. So maybe there's something that can be corrected there. Next person on our list was WB2 Charlie Quebec Tango. That signal was very weak before, but we're willing to give it a try. WB2 Charlie Quebec Tango, K2RIW, go right ahead. And we'll stand by again a little bit later. Yeah. Right now, John, AC2SHO, from Los Alamos. Go right ahead, John. And not only you want to have a question for us, but give us a couple of words on what Los Alamos is doing these days. You guys are doing some pretty fancy pure research, and I bet you're NASA connected from time to time. KC2SHO, K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2RIW, KC2SHO. Good evening, Dick. Everyone else on the net. Yeah, that's right. There is space things going on here. I'm not really that knowledgeable about all the different things that go on here. I probably should delve into that a little more, but I'll just give a quick list of some of the things we do tonight before I pose my question. And then maybe if there's specific things we're interested in, I can go look around and see what I can find. But, Los Alamos is quite a large facility, and here we do chemistry, materials, nuclear and particle physics and science. We do climate, biological, energy, space, information sciences and technology, cybersecurity, kind of falls under that. And I just saw 8 Los Alamos projects won awards in this R&D 100 award ceremony that I think this is a sort of a nice thing that they do in science for the top 100 research and development projects every year. So 8 of those are ours. Pretty cool. I'll drop it, see if you have any questions before giving you mine.
Good sounding stuff. But go right ahead with your information, John. Go ahead.
This may be kind of a silly thing, but maybe this is one for Roy. I don't know. We'll see where it goes. But I've often realized that when it gets colder out, the exhaust from cars and other things, giving exhaust emissions are more noticeable. What's the reason for that? Why is it that if I'm walking down the road and cars are going by when it's colder out, it seems to be more likely to be detectable by me than on a hot day? K2RIW, KC2SHO.
Yeah, I've got a guess on this that I'm going to offer, even though my audio is coming through quite low. The machine has got some kind of a failure tonight. When you burn a hydrocarbon, one of the main ingredients that comes out in the exhaust is H2O, water. And if the air temperature outside is below a certain temperature, below the, what do we call it now, the vapor point, then the droplets of water immediately condense from gas into aerosols, and the white smoke you see is aerosols. You also notice that in the wintertime, an automobile that has just started up makes a lot more thicker white smoke in the beginning. The cold engine is running much richer and therefore makes a lot more water aerosol molecules. That's my guess as to what's happening. So cold atmosphere, very similar to the vapor trails you see out of a jet engine flying at high altitude. When the water vapor that's in the exhaust hits the cold air, it condenses, creates the white smoke that you see. That's what I think is going on, John. KC2SHO, K2LAW, the TechNet. Drag your feet in case anyone else wants to add some words to this one.
Hey, to the GS.
Go right ahead, Roy.
There's probably other organic compounds as vapor is... Vapor point is probably affected by cold weather, but you know, you don't even have to go that far. When you're talking to someone outside in the middle of the winter, a lot of times you can see your breath, and so it's partially the same process going on.
Yeah, think about the fact that if you're walking across a very dry desert on a hot day, because of the amount of moisture that your breathing system adds to the air that's going into your lungs, and a lot of that moisture is coming back out. On a very dry day, my guess is your breathing can lose a significant amount of water that you've got to be ingesting to stay hydrated. Is that true, Roy? AC2GS, K2RIW?
Yes, Dick. They call it insensible loss because it's not obvious that you're losing it at the time, both from sweating and from inhaling and exhaling increased humidified air. Into the environment, you lose fluid.
I'm guessing the breathing system, nose, trachea, and what else, all have mixture. They all have mechanisms by which they add moisture to the air that's being ingested. I think thoroughly dry air coming into lung material would not be a good mixture. Is that true, Roy? K2RIW?
Yes, Dick, it can be an irritant, and if you ever visit a hospital, very often you'll notice that the oxygen supply usually is pulled out from an insert in the wall, and they have this little humidifier device. It's a little fluid-filled device where the air bubbles at the bottom through the fluid into the dry portion of a tube and then feeds into someone's nose. We like to have a humid environment. We're you know, organic creatures that are mostly water to begin with. And so there's a whole system designed specifically. We talked about it one time. The nasal passages have things called turbinates, which are folds of mucous membrane and fine hairs. There's a lot of moisture sitting in that layer. We all know and love when our nose runs and such. And so every time we take a breath through our nose, and that's why it's a good idea to breathe through your nose, we're much more efficiently humidified than breathing through your mouth. People who breathe through their mouth tend to end up with a very dry mouth because our mouth is not engineered that well for humidifying air.
A person who's running a marathon and not breathe something up through his nose, he's forced to breathe through his mouth. So a person running a marathon on a very low humidity day is really putting his body under a lot more stress. Is that true, Roy? AC2GS, K2IW.
Yes, Dick, but that seems to be the whole point of that exercise, is stressing your body to see how much you can throw at it, where it will take it, and go on nevertheless. So yes, that's another. There's a lot of fluid loss during these marathons, again because of the sweating and because of the extraordinary inhalation, exhalation, inhalation, etc., etc. So usually you see these guys chug-a-lugging bottled water all the time.
Being properly hydrated is very important. So I'll turn it back to John. K2SHO. K2RIW, you got it, John. Los Alamos.
Very good and interesting, as always. I think you answered a second question that kind of came to me as we were as you were discussing it there. Many times when I'm out on a trail, or especially if I think I need to conserve moisture, I try to force myself not to breathe through my mouth, even if feel like some heavy breathing is necessary. So I feel like that conserves moisture. Do you think there's any truth to that, or am I fooling myself?
Let's see what Roy's got to say on the recommendation for this. EC2GS, K2RIW.
I haven't seen a great deal of literature on the subject, but I would assume that since the turbinates and the mucous membranes in your nose are pretty efficient at humidifying they might be able to extract just a touch of the additional water content as it circulates through your system, but that's just a guess on my part. It certainly is better than doing it through your mouth, because you're going to dry out the mucosal membranes in your mouth, and that's going to cause you more discomfort and other problems.
So I think what you're saying, Roy, is that all you can breathe through your nose, keep doing it, and breathe through the mouth only when you have no choice but doing it that way. Is that true, Roy?
Yes, Dick. It's always good to use the organ systems that were designed over a billion years to efficiently do what they were designed to do. I mean, theoretically, it is possible to walk on your hands, but I would suggest that most people stay on their feet.
Good example. How about you, John?
I was laughing a little at Roy's response. Very good. Okay, that's all I really had. I always enjoy the net, and a little levity is always welcome as well. Thank you, guys. EC2GS, K2RIW, KC2SHO, Los Alamos. Thank you.
Yeah, what we've said is that the TechNet really discusses subjects of interest to radio amateurs. Radio first, astronomy second, science third, maybe the other way around. Any subject of interest to ham radio operators. Who ever thought we'd be discussing oil burners, humidifiers, and air filters tonight? But those are good subjects ham radio operators are interested in. And easy control, these are things that we have the ability to control, buy, use, maintain, and so on. And we think the TechNet does more good than harm. And it never has 100% accuracy, but we try to correct the errors when they do occur. We're going down the list of everybody who checked in. One more call for WB2CQT if you're there. K2RIW.
WB2CQT, how now?
Tremendously better. Please start off with your name, sir, and then your question or comment. You got it, Mr. CQT. What did you change? You made a huge improvement.
Name is Larry. I tried with a walkie-talkie before, and I had to go through boxes in the closet to drag out an IC2800 that's been sitting for years. The first question is, have you noticed that the FCC put out a notice about the Chinese walkie-talkies, basically making them non-legal, as far as I could read that advisory that they sent out? Go ahead.
That's a brand new one on me, Larry. So you're saying that the Chinese walkie-talkies are not legal, even though they're being sold? Anybody got any further comments on all of the above? Give me your call letters right now, K2RIW, at the TechNet.
Give you two chance some comments.
Go right ahead, Rich.
K2RIW in the group, WB2GXM. The FCC is trying to say that the importation of the Chinese radios across the board would not comply with their standards. The ARRL is countering with the argument that in the hands of competent amateur radio operators, these Chinese radios should be allowed to be used. These radios can transmit out of band, but ham radio operators should know how to use them in band. That's what the ARRL argument is all about, WB2GXM.
That makes a lot of sense. And even the ham radio band-only pieces of equipment that we buy, if you disconnect certain diodes in the printed circuit board, you can make it transmit out of frequency. So there's a lot of equipment. If you're an unskilled operator, you could use it off of frequency. Conscientious radio amateurs know how to stay in band, and so therefore any piece of equipment could be modified to go out of band, and therefore that's not sufficient reason to restrict the import of those devices is one possible interpretation. Over to you, Larry. The BB2, Charlie Quebec Tango. You sound a lot better on that IC2800, I think you said, K2RIW.
Okay, it was not only the importation, it's, they're saying you really should not be using them, and they're setting a very high fine per day for using such. Now, some of them have an FCC number on the walkie-talkie. That's part 90. This is something up in the air. My second question is, does anybody have the QRP radio called MCHF? Yeah, it's a QRP. Some of them are from China, and some of them are not from China. I'm just wondering if anybody has one.
Well, we'll follow it up to the net and see. Does anyone have it? MCHF. Possibly from China. Mike, Charlie, Hotel Foxtrot. Anybody got one of those rigs? Give me your call letters, K2RIW.
Quick comment to end the first point.
Go right ahead.
Larry, to my knowledge, it is not yet law to not use a Chinese radio. You can use a Chinese radio, you can use the Baofeng, you can use the... Well, the Baofeng is the most obvious perpetrator of this. A Baofeng can be operated out of band. But so far, there is no law against using these radios, WB2GXM.
So I think you're saying, John, there's a possible proposal to lay down more solid law, but at this time, there is no real law restricting their use, even though they're capable of out of band. Is that one interpretation? Rich, go ahead.
Correct, Dick. There is no present law against using a Baofeng or similar radio in the United States. They don't like it, but they haven't outlawed it yet, and there's no fine. WB2GXM.
Okay, yeah. Larry, what made you think that there was a fine in force already? Maybe somebody is in the talking phase of that, but I'd like to believe that no amateur has been fined for having or using one of these Baofeng, Roxxon, and other rigs that are capable of transmitting out of band. You've got it, Larry, K2RIW.
Well, the ARRL, I can't get to the computer while I'm at the radio. They're in different rooms. But the ARRL has put out a notice about this. They have a talking point about it and how they're going to try to fight it, I guess. But the document is available online, an FCC document. You can read it. I just can't get to it right now. And it's kind of severe if you read it. Go ahead.
Did the severe part say that it has already been enacted and that people are starting to be fined? Or is this just a proposal, so to speak? What's your interpretation of what you read, Larry? Go ahead.
From what I remember, it's not just a proposal. It's the law of the land, per se. Somebody with a computer could look it up right now very quickly. I don't want you to spend a lot of time on this right now.
Okay, Larry, you've alerted us to this, and I guess we'll all do a little bit further looking. I thank you for bringing that to our attention. I'd like to believe it's a little bit of a red herring. I think ARRL will do a pretty good job of defending us in this particular arena, it says here. We go down the list. It's time to go over to Science Talk with Dr. Roy, AC2GS. But before I do, Eric, KE2EJ, are you on frequency? If you are hearing us, starting about 15 minutes ago, the audio coming out of 85 jumped down about 6 or 10 dB in audio volume. Beeps are the same volume, but the audio coming through jumped down. Something changed. If that's correctable, it would be helpful. KE2EJ, if you're there, K2RIW. Maybe Eric's not there. Okay, so it looks like each of us are going to have to hit our microphone a little bit harder than normal. T2GS, K2RIW, you got it, Dr. Roy.
Okay, thank you very much, Dick, but I don't think we quite finished totally with... Hey, Larry asked about the MCHF QRP transceiver. It's basically a homebrewed amateur radio project, and There have been some companies that have supplied kits for it. There is a web page in case he's interested, although I would assume that he's already found it.
Do you have any further comments on this one, Larry? Over to you, Larry.
Oh, I found it, all right. There's a guy in West Virginia that'll put it together for you. Not the Chinese clone, but from other sources, put it together for you and sell it to you. And I think I'm going to go through with that and do that very shortly.
What's the advantage of doing that? Is this a high-performance rig that's less expensive? Is that your major motivation, Larry? Go ahead.
High-frequency operation from where I live in my apartment. And you could tell me about different antennas and what I could try to do, but I've tried. It's a reception problem as well. It's a small portable rig. It's very, very small. It's no more than 10 watts. It's a software-defined radio. And sideband CW, AM, FM, and some digital stuff. You could easily connect it to a computer and have computer control and all that kind of stuff. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for that information, Larry. Of all the people who are on this particular repeater, the man who is deepest into software-defined radios with digital signal processing is Dr. Roy. So Roy is going to tell us whatever he knows about that rig right now. AC2GS, K2RAW. Go ahead, Roy.
Well, is he? I'm not really familiar with MCHF. I understand the basic concept that it's an inexpensive SDR, although they mentioned a lot more about the digital signal processing functions rather than nuts and bolts, software-defined radios. There's no mention of IQ outputs, but there is some of the functionality of a software-defined radio with a pan adapter and all. There's a lot of other software-defined radios out there, although most of the inexpensive ones are receive-only. They're not transmit and receive. He might be interested in a used Flex Radio 1500 that has a transceiver function, and it's very mature, and the software is well. But if this floats his boat, then great. I mean, like I said, software-defined radio, I think, is the future. It hits the K3X model. It's really an SDR, but it has knobs and dials. And the ICOM 7300 is a hidden away software-defined radio as well. So I'm all gangbusters with the technology, and I'm not really that familiar, though, with this MCHF. There is no actual manufacturer. There's just a bunch of guys who are designing and working on it, and third parties that are just building kits. It's sort of the way that Apache Labs started with the NN software-defined radios. It was designed by the Tucson Amateur Packet Radio Club and leased to an Indian firm to just kind of build the circuit and ship them out. So, you know, caveat emptor. You never know who the hell is building the kits for you.
Yeah, I'd just like to point out that the Chinese have cloned it, and you could buy it from your computer, and the Chinese company is called Recent, R-E-C-E-N-T. But I didn't go that route. I want to go a different route to get one because I've heard of some quality control with the Chinese ones. So that's it for this on this topic from me, WB2CQT.
Okay, so Dick, I guess I'll just go into the science talk, okay? Anyway, once again, as always, if you have any questions, if you have any topics of interest, if you want to refute anything, feel free. The email address, as always, is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. And everything that I talk about, and even there's a subject that Paul is going to talk about later, the sound of the wind on Mars, will be available on my webpage as a link. You just click on the link and it will take you to the webpage, and that page to get there is roy.ac2gs.com and roy.ac2gs.com in your web browser. Now let me break for a second and I'll hit the first topic. Now I always try to find interesting videos to recommend at the top of these little presentations. So tonight I offer a new video from a fellow with a very interesting way of demonstrating scientific concepts that wouldn't translate well just onto radio. We've often talked about how often every representation of our solar system has played hard and fast with the scale of everything to get everything visibly into the picture. Now, drawn more accurately, the sun would massively overshadow most of the planets, and you probably would need to fold out a very wide set of papers just to get the relative distances more accurately shown. This fellow in this particular video that I'll post on roy.ac2gs.com takes a little solar system and accurately scales it down to a factor of 52,800,000 to 1, where our Earth is approximately the size of a basketball and our moon is the size of a tennis ball. He then shows the relative size of all the other planets in our solar system and their relative locations if their distances from the sun, or in this case, this basketball, were kept to the same scale. Let me just drop for a second. Anyway, it's a fascinating exercise into trying to get across the remarkable scale of our solar system. I personally can't wait to see what he comes up with if he ever tries to do it for the entire galaxy. So if you have a chance, take a look at it. The link will be on my website, roy.ac2gs.com. Let me, for any questions or comments, this is AC2GS. Okay, next up in video recommendations is a bit more difficult for me to explain accurately. Apparently, it was produced by SLAC National Accelerator Laboratory. That's the Stanford Lab Acceleration Center. It seems to be a cartoon done in a rather philosophical film noir style about the existential crisis of a proton that's sentient, that came into existence soon after the Big Bang and was finally approaching its end by annihilation with another proton, by the other proton going in the opposite direction. The two of them were inside an actual Hadron Collider. Now, somehow, it elicited, at least in me, a sense of sadness for the passing of a thing that's been around for 13 billion years. So please, if you have a chance, take a look at it. The link, again, will be posted on my website, roy.ac2gs.com. So let me drop for a second.
Next time on the comment.
It's Rich.
Roy, I find that particularly ironic, since protons have very positive attitudes, WB2GXM.
Very good, Rich. I appreciated the joke. I liked it a lot. You got to realize, you know, we were talking about Bush was 94 years old when he passed away, and that's a deep age for a man's life. But these poor protons, you know, he was a mere child at 13.7999 billion years of age. Anyway, on to my third and final video recommendation for tonight is a nice little demonstration by a very clever engineer. Her name is Jerry Ellsworth, and she recently became a ham a few years ago. She does a magnetic loop antenna, and she was interested in kind of generally getting people have a better sense for how magnetic loops work. There's a lot of weirdness going on. If you go to the HF band, some people talk about magnetic loops as shielded completely from electrical fields and purely a magnetic field antenna, and others will say it's so short that the current is, for all intents and purposes, equivalent at every end of the antenna. And she has a very, very nice video that demonstrates that a small magnetic loop functionally has the same current and voltage distribution as any other shortened dipole. So it's a very good video. I posted it. In addition, if other people would rather see someone else use a different technique to measure the voltage and current potentials, I added that too to the link. So both of those will hopefully edify people. And magnetic loop antennas are very fascinating things. And it seems to be that people talk a lot about them. They have a great takeoff angle. Don't need to be elevated more than say about 10 feet to get decent amount of takeoff angle. So check out that link, and this is AC2GS. Let me drop before I start next article. Okay. Yeah. Sometimes it's impossible to keep up with the latest things I find. And recently I decided to look into 3D printing, and now there's this fellow over in China, genetically engineered beings. You may have read this lately. The twin girls born earlier this month had their DNA altered to prevent them from contracting HIV, according to an Associated Press report. If confirmed, the birth would signify the first gene-edited babies in human history, a stunning development that's sparking an outcry from scientists and ethicists. Professor He Yangku of Shenzhen, China, made the announcement earlier a few weeks ago in Hong Kong, informing the Associated Press of his apparent achievement and releasing an accompanying video. He claims that the twin girls were born earlier this month and that he altered their DNA with the CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing tool, did to confer a built-in immunity to the AIDS virus. The claim has yet to be independently confirmed, and the findings haven't been published to a peer-reviewed journal. Outside experts haven't had an opportunity to corroborate the claims or assess the efficacy or safety of the procedure. Let me drop for a second. The BBC article describes this news as dubious, but there's reason to believe the claims could be true. Back in 2016, scientists in China used CRISPR to introduce a beneficial mutation that disables an immune cell's gene called CCR5, conferring immunity by knocking out a critical receptor or mode of entry for HIV viruses to infect the cell. The experiment showed that someday it might be possible to deliberately endow human DNA with this desirable mutation. The key word being someday. Immediately after the 2016 experiment, scientists destroyed the embryos, saying more research will be required before modified embryos can be implanted in mother's womb. Now, alarmingly, Professor Hay has decided quite unilaterally to move ahead with this research, reportedly implanting the modified embryos into the mother's womb, a step considered by most experts to be highly premature and reckless at this stage. Let me drop for a second. Gene editing of human embryos is sanctioned in the United States, but all embryos must be destroyed within a few days. A issue with this form of gene editing is that it's done on germline cells, which means these traits are heritable. Such is the case with these twins in China, who, if they are indeed genetically modified, will pass modified DNA down to any children that they have. Scientists are still a long way from knowing if this procedure is effective and if it's safe. Now, in this case, there's a good reason for doubt. The CCR5 gene is known to trigger offsetting conditions, such as a higher risk of contracting the West Nile disease virus. Research also suggests it increases a person's chance of dying from influenza. Also, CRISPR is a notoriously blunt instrument, and there's no way of if his procedure introduced knockoff effects, some of which wouldn't be known until the girls were maturity. Let me drop for a second. Now, details of the procedure are still scarce, such as the identity of the parents or where the research was conducted, but preliminary information acquired by AP is already concern. The AP reports that CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing was done during the in vitro fertilization, or IVF. Several days later, the cells of the modified embryo were checked for signs of DNA editing. Of the 22 embryos edited, 11 were used in 6 implant attempts, and only one worked, resulting in the twin birth. In all, some of 7 couples participated in this procedure. These girls may go down in history as the first enhanced humans produced by gene editing. Follow-up tests suggest that one had just one copy of the intended gene alteration, while the other one had both. Individuals with one copy of the mutated gene can still contract HIV, but they may have an increased ability to ward off the effects of the disease. Now, many experts say the procedure should not have been allowed to happen, but the decision to allow the implantation of the partially modified embryo was an even worse indiscretion, calling it a form of human experimentation. Let me drop for a second. A gene editing expert not involved in this procedure said that this particular child there really was almost, there was almost really nothing to be gained in terms of protection against HIV, and yet he's exposing that child to all the unknown safety risks, adding that the entire enterprise is unconscionable and an experiment on human beings that is not morally or ethically defensible. Gene editing itself is experimental and is still associated with off-target mutations capable of causing genetic problems early and later in life, including the development of cancers, a noted medical ethicist told the BBC. This experiment exposes healthy, normal children to risks of gene editing for no real necessary benefit. And if that's not enough, this story gets even more murky. Can we drop for a second? He, who works at the Southern University of Science and Technology of China in Shenzhen, gave the university official notice of this experiment long after he said he started it, AP reports. It's not clear if the participants understood the true nature of the experiment, which was described as an AIDS vaccine development program. The Shenzhen University said he's work significantly violated academic and ethics standards, and an investigation is in the works. He, who owns 2 genetic companies in China, was reportedly assisted by U.S. scientist Michael Deem, who was an advisor to He when they worked together at Rice University in Houston. Deem also has stakes in both of He's companies. Condemnation of the procedure, however, is not universal among experts. Harvard geneticist George Church defended the alleged human gene editing, telling AP that HIV is a major and growing public health threat. Work done by He was justifiable. Let me drop for a second. A fascinating aspect of this alarming story is that He was not trying to cure a genetic disease. Rather, it was a deliberate attempt to endow humans with the capacity to ward off a future infection, namely one caused by AIDS virus. In this sense, the procedure, if it happens in the way that He is claiming, might be considered an enhancement rather than a therapy. As such, these girls may go down in history as the first enhanced humans produced by gene editing. Stop for a second. Unfortunately, the brazen recklessness exhibited by He will now place a dark taint on this futuristic prospect. Yes, we may eventually use gene editing to cure diseases and endow our species with new capacities, but such research cannot happen at the whim of rogue scientists. And you might wonder how the authorities back in the rather authoritarian People's Republic of China are taking all this. Are they applauding their prodigal son? Well, in 2 words, not really. Last week, Tuesday, China ordered a thorough investigation into the project. The government has now taken the added step of shutting down the work until further notice. Speaking to CCTV's 8 Television, China's Vice Minister of Science and Technology said the government is strongly opposed to the project. The experiment crossed the line of morality and ethics adhered to by the academic community and was shocking and unacceptable, as reported by the AP. Let me drop for a second. On further investigation, His project appears to be the work of an unsupervised lab that took great pains to avoid proper channels, such as failing to file the clinical trial to the country's registry until early November, which was around the same time the twins were born. Furthermore, the Chinese scientists have rushed to condemn his work. In a joint statement published just last week, the Genetic Society of China and the Chinese Society for Stem Cell Research said they strongly condemn the project for its extreme irresponsibility, both scientifically and ethically. And as the VOA report, over 300 scientists, both from China and abroad, have signed a petition questioning the necessity of this work. Let me drop for a second. As this story developed, his future appears murkier and murkier. Rumors are now circulating that he has been detained by the Chinese government. As reported by Newsweek, the Hong Kong-based publication Apple Daily claims the embattled scientist was summoned back to Southern University of Science and Technology in Shenzhen, where he works, at the close of the Hong Kong summit. Also, the university's president, Chen Yiqi, apparently under house arrest on campus, and security guards have been stationed on the university grounds. These claims, however, have not been corroborated, and a spokesman for the university told the South China Morning Post that right now nobody's information is completely straight. Only the official channels are, adding that they cannot answer any questions regarding the matter right now. But if they have any information, they'll get back to you any day now. Let me drop for a second. Okay, he's currently on unpaid leave, did not disclose the details of his research to the university, and in a statement released last week, the university said his work seriously violated the academic and ethical standards, prompting the establishment of an independent committee and investigation into the matter. So, he seems to stand condemned, but when someone figures out how to do a thing, they tend to keep doing it. So, don't expect this to be the last story of genetically engineered human beings. And, by the way, if you haven't ever read Brave New World, you might want to pick up a copy and brush up on how human genetic engineering might go very, very wrong. Let me drop for any questions or comments. This is AC2GS.
Roy, I think the actual gene editing was done by a process called CRISPR. I think that's the way it's pronounced. What is CRISPR? Is that a computer program that helps facilitate this modification procedure?
No, Dick. It's not a computer program. It's a technical method of intercalating and extracting genetic material into the actual DNA structure of a cell by use of different methods, enzymes and such that do this magic. It's a very esoteric method that they use, but it's been used all over the world. CRISPR is a CRISPR, there's no E in it, and it's an acronym for a bigger word that I don't really remember right now. But it's a technique. It's not a computer program, but it's a physical technique that requires reagents and meticulous physical labor on cell structures.
WS2N?
Yes, Paul.
I would say about 6 months or maybe a year ago, 60 Minutes had a piece on this CRISPR. It went on and on, and they showed all these different labs in the United States working on CRISPR. So they must be using it for other purposes. I guess we're not changing human beings yet, but they must be using it here. I don't remember the details, but they said that CRISPR is like the next best thing for research. Back to you.
Yes, Paul. Well, this presently is the go-to method for genetic manipulation that's being attempted. There are a lot of genetic disabilities out there, and the cleanest way of treating them, if you can, is to introduce a cell line that is theoretically genetically identical to yours, but has been ever so slightly modified to get rid of those nasty genes causing the problem. There are people working on all kinds of genetic disorders, even something like retinitis pigmentosa they're working on. There are a lot of problems in doing that, but CRISPR seems to be this not an easy method, but so far is the only effective method that genetic manipulation has found. You know, be better methods out there waiting to be discovered, and we're going to mess with genetics. We're going to play God. That's just what we do.
Comment.
Comment away.
Yeah, just recently, I saw a Netflix documentary called The Evolution of Us, two-part series, and it may be true that we're not quite really doing a lot of it yet, but we actually are. We are doing genetic modification, and they give you some examples on that show. So worth a watch if you get the time and you have access to Netflix. The Evolution of Us. Really interesting. EC2GFKC2SHL.
Yes, John. Well, I mean, everything continues to evolve. Usually over the history of this world, it was in the environment that shaped evolution. But now we're shaping our own evolution, if you will. There are things that are more readily lead to reproduction than other traits, and so those particular traits are coming out more with each future generation. And unfortunately, although I love the old science fiction shows, which kind of show everyone just kind of being this tall, skinny thing with no hair and a head twice the size and telepathic powers, there's no particular direction that evolution has. We could evolve into smarter creatures. We could evolve into dumber creatures. It depends what quality passes on effectively that improves the chance of survival of children with those gene sequences. So, yeah, we're always evolving. You can't stop it. But you can't really select what direction it goes into as an individual. Mankind does that as a group thing.
Ray, I've got two questions. Number one, this procedure that he did is considered unethical because there is no way right now, I think, of predicting. Yes, he created some desirable characteristics, but did he simultaneously create some undesirable characteristics of the offspring? I'm asking your personal guess. What do you think are the chances of the undesirables being worse than desirables? That's question number one. Question number two, are there modeling programs that when you know you're going to do certain kind of gene modification, are there modeling programs that with high fidelity that can predict what all the possible results are going to be? I'm a little worried that probably doesn't exist. GS, K2LIW.
Well, you never quite know what you're playing with when you don't know a lot about the subject, and we don't know a lot about this subject. So is it possible that he introduced some aberration that's going to cause these poor girls to suffer from, say, leukemia or some debilitating disease when they hit 13 years of age? It's possible. It's difficult to say. If you remember the earliest cloning of those, I think it's a goat, I forget exactly what, a cow or a goat, they were arthritic, they were deformed, they were deeply problematic. They were not the most healthy clones that have been designed. So I think there is an inherent risk in this, especially out of ignorance. And unfortunately, as much as I would really, truly love to have a program that did that, again, this is a Star Trek and sometime in the distant future. We just don't have the faintest idea. There are so many interrelationships of genetics and other factors that affect genetics that we don't really know. We kind of hopefully know that if you remove a gene, it doesn't get expressed. But when you add a gene, it might get expressed. It might get expressed in a very strange way. It might have a cascade effect with other gene expressions. We just don't know.
A2H.
Yes, Lou.
So, even getting away from the individual organism, think about the herd. Now, these HIV-resistant people, can they still be carriers? And if they're carriers but they're not affected, what would that do to the non-carriers? So you can look at this on multiple scales, I would think.
I agree with you, Lou. Unfortunately, we don't quite what that will kind of lead to. What they basically figured out, and they figured it out through a clever way. There were a few people who were exposed to HIV a long time ago and were given, you know, the usual 3 to 6 of life expectancy and are still alive 20 years later, and they took them back to the lab.